Welcome back to Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner, and today we're checking in with two of our beat reporters. Now, Jenny Brundin, who covers education. And we're going to focus on the achievement gap. It's that gap between how well African Americans and white students do in school. And it was at its narrowest at the height of desegregation in the 1970s and 80s. That's when students of different races were bused to the same schools to learn together. Well, a new study shows that since that era, schools across the nation have been re-segregating. Jenny's going to tell us about this study. She also has a preview of education bills in the coming legislative session. Welcome back to the show, Jenny.
Nice to be here, Ryan.
Why don't we start with the state legislature, because it's back in session tomorrow. I understand school districts are hoping for a quiet session overall.
Yes, they've been reeling, to put it mildly, from all the new laws that they've had to comply with. A new reading law, new academic standards, a new teacher's evaluation law. So they're really hoping for some calm this year. But that's not to say there won't be a few big pieces of legislation.
That's right. I mean, we know of at least one big piece of education legislation, which is attempting to overhaul how public schools are funded.
Yes. Denver Democratic Senator Mike Johnson, he floated this idea last year. It's really a massive undertaking. The last major overhaul was 20 years ago, and since then there have been a slew of new reforms that schools must abide by, including federal laws. But schools are still funded in the same way. Ed News Colorado did a nice preview piece of this legislation, and we have a link to that article on our website. So Senator Johnson's idea is to construct a new formula that attacks two problems, adequacy and equity. First, he wants to boost the amount of money for schools, and this would require going to voters for approval.
So that's adequacy of funding. What about equity? How would it address that?
Ryan, this is really complicated, but this is the heart of it. Right now, school districts get block grants, which they divvy up to their schools, and there's some attempt to adjust for needs like special education and English language learners. But Senator Johnson and others have said this formula doesn't go far enough. They'd like to have a system where money flows to individual schools rather than school districts, and more money is spent on kids with the highest needs.
What are some of the other likely bills this session?
Well, another bill that perhaps has its best chance ever is one to allow undocumented immigrants who've graduated from Colorado high schools to pay a lower tuition rate at colleges and universities here. They currently pay out-of-state tuition. And this bill's been defeated six times in past legislatures, but this year, with Democratic majorities in both chambers, it stands a good chance of passing.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're checking in with CPR's education reporter, Jenny Brundin. She drops by occasionally to share what's going on in education on her beat with us. And let's turn to this fascinating new study from Stanford University, which shows that there's been a significant return to racial isolation in the nation's schools.
It's the first study to look at whether court-ordered busing ended the legacy of Jim Crow in education. It finds that districts that stopped integrating schools have seen a steady but significant return to schools that are nearly all black or all white or all Hispanic.
Now, do we know whether resegregation has led to that widening of the achievement gap?
Well, the same researcher will now focus on studying that question in detail, but there's already a large body of research that shows resegregation hasn't helped test scores, graduation, and college entrance rates for minority students. It shows African Americans and Hispanics learn more in integrated schools and, in fact, go to college in higher numbers.
What do we know about the achievement gap, though, between blacks and whites at the height of desegregation, again in the, 70s and 80s?
Right. So it was at its narrowest point then ever recorded in the history of the National Assessment of Educational Progress. That test is considered to be the most reliable long-term measure of student achievement. Graduation rates for blacks at desegregated high schools also rose. There were many things going on at that time, programs connected to the war on poverty being one, and that could have helped. But the author of the study concludes that desegregation helped blacks and didn't harm whites.
But the study is not suggesting a return to forced busing.
No, it is not. Many parents, whether they're black or white, hated busing their children. Many black families didn't like that their neighborhood schools were closed, and indeed, black families had to do most of the busing. So in the 1990s, when the Supreme Court made it easier for school districts to end busing, they did. So in the past decade, there's been this speeding up of resegregation, including in Colorado. Often you have minority students segregated in failing schools. And that national test, the NAEP that we talked about earlier, shows achievement for Black students has slowed down.
So where is this issue headed now?
What's at the center of the national discussion now on the achievement gap is a variety of reform measures. Things like holding teachers accountable, charter schools, No Child Left Behind Act. All these measures, though, researchers say, have yet to be as successful as desegregation. We've included a link to a story in The Atlantic on a new idea, voluntarily integrating schools, and that seems to be showing promise.
Well, I'm interested in what voluntarily integrating schools would look like. So again, that's at cpr.org. And finally, Jenny, you read a little piece that details what a day in the life of a Chinese student in China is like.
Yes, this was a little blog post in the Hechinger Report. It's an education journalism site. It was an interesting read. The biggest difference between the school day there and here is that as the Chinese student gets older, the school day lengthens, whereas here it pretty much stays the same length, if not shortening, in the final 2 years of high school. Elementary school there starts at age 7 and generally goes from 8 a.m. to anywhere from 3 to 5 p.m., depending on the city. The content is about the same, except Chinese students may have a painting class and one class that translates to education of thoughts and morality.
Okay, and then what happens at middle school and high school?
Well, that's where the pressure really comes on in China. Wealthier Chinese begin hiring private tutors or move to better neighborhoods to get into better schools. And school goes from about 7 or 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. with an hour break for dinner, then an hour of P.E., and then study halls or tutoring until 9. And then they go home. By middle school, students are already taking physics, chemistry, biology, and political science. About 70% of middle school kids get into high school based on one single exam. Courses are about the same in high school, except the study sessions there go until 11 o'clock at night.
These kids are working longer days than I am,
Jenny. It would seem, but probably not having as much fun as you, Ryan.
Perhaps not. Jenny, thank you for bringing some fun to this.
Thank you, Ryan.
Jenny Brundine covers education for Colorado Public Radio. You can read the reports she mentioned at cpr.org. And if you'd like one more interesting tidbit that Jenny's read, it's about what college leaders themselves think about the cost of college, and we'll post that as well.